This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Marcel P. He is a musician and producer based out of Germany. Marcel, great talking to you.
Thanks for having me on the show, Robert.
And Marcel, your band name is Miel Noir, and your record label is Caustic Records.
That's right. Miel Noir, the French name, it translates to Black Honey in English, was first started by my partner, Demo, as a solo project of his when he was still working with his dark folk and black metal hybrid project called Svarok. And I first joined him in Svarok, and then we turned the solo experimental side project into a full-blown band after we had our first live concert in Spain at a festival.
Is Schwarze Honig, the dark honey, is that just the German version of Miel Noir, or is that a specific song name?
That's the translation of Miel Noir, and we also turned it into a song that's one of the first songs that we wrote together. And the first version of Schwarzer Honig on our album Honey and Ash, we had this friend of ours do the vocals, Gerhard of Aller Seelen, the famous underground ritual, folk, gothic, whatever project, has been around since the late 80s, and he's the guy who brought the two of us together. We first get to know each other as live and later studio musicians in Aller Seelen. That's how it all started. And we had him as a frequent collaborator on three of our albums. It started out with a song, and the song's title was Der Honig der Grauen Stadt, which translates to The Honey of the Grey City. It was a song by Svarok, and our friend Gerhard was invited to co-write the lyrics and to do the vocals on that song that was released on an EP by Svarok, and that's how Demo and Gerhard got interested in the topics of bees and honey and the different religious and spiritual traditions all over the world. And Miel Noir was first supposed to be the title for a festival, but that didn't really go anywhere. And then at one of our concerts, our friend Demo came up to Gerhard, and then he also approached me to do a let's call it a performance art photo session to accompany a small, I don't know how many that he did, like 30 or 40 limited edition CDRs with a booklet with that photo session and artistic pictures in it. And that was the first time he used Miel Noir as a project name. And from then on, it developed. The first thing that he did was Drone Experimental. And the next time he used the name, it was Piano Dark Ambient, and after that we were asked to perform at a festival, now famous festival in Spain, called Madrid Leblanc, with groups like Ostara, Foresta di Ferro, Aller Seelen, Die Weiße Rose, and we were a 3-day festival, and we were asked to perform there with three different projects of ours. I played there with as bass player in Aller Seelen, drums in Die Weiße Rose, and also drums in Svarok. And then there was one band called Nevus that canceled on short notice, and we had like 2 weeks to come up with a Miel Noir live performance to fill that gap left by the other band, because we were there anyway, and it was an opportunity to try something new. And that one live performance, as I said, on short notice, no real rehearsal, no nothing, that worked so well that at that moment when we exited the stage, we were like, okay, we're doing this as a band. This has to go somewhere.
What originally inspired you to become a musician?
It just happened somehow. I had that more or less typical career of my parents wanted me to take piano lessons as a small child. I had no real say in it. Just the thing that you get as basically as an order from your musically inclined parent as a kid, you're doing this now. But I liked it. Well, that's playing solo. And my mother is a lifelong semi-professional cellist, and her orchestra, when I was around 13 or so, was looking for more people who played the string bass or double bass, and it was more or less decided over a glass of beer and a glass of wine at a retreat of that orchestra. Like, people asked my mother, "You've got that kid, and he is like strong for his age. Couldn't he play the string bass?" Because that orchestra had a string bass of its own, just for rehearsals. So there was no need to just buy an instrument. And the son of the orchestra's conductor offered to give me lessons, and I was basically rushed through like a crash course of 5 or 6 months to learn the string bass, like the basics, as fast as I could to join that orchestra, because they didn't have enough people. And I think like 3 or 4 months at least below that threshold where I should have been performing with them, but I just had to. And that's how I got a bit railroaded into it, you could say, but I grew to like it. And I played in different orchestras and youth orchestras, the school's orchestra and the city's orchestra for years before I picked up my first bass guitar. So I came to playing rock music through classical music for years and years. And the first time that I was supposed to play bass guitar without having played bass guitar before was at my school, where they were looking for people to play in an impromptu band to say goodbye to a headmaster that retired. And again, I had, I don't know, it was like 4 weeks or something to get the basics down to perform. I think we played like Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, the usual like school band stuff. But more or less all my instruments and also my singing happened for the first time on relatively short notice. There was some date, there was some performance, there was some concert, and I knew I had to do something there, so I better get at it.
Is there still a strong classical influence in your more recent work?
I grew up with classical music around me. This was my first music that I knew as a kid was classical music from my mother's side, and to some extent classical rock music from my father's side. And I think the one thing that just, not just the melodies, but what has stuck with me over the years from that classical background was I never had a problem with playing stuff composed by other people, because classical stuff is the classical stuff. You don't make up your own classical tunes. And when I started to join rock bands, I never really founded a or co-founded a band. I mostly met up with people who already had a band and there was an opening. So there were songs and there were dates coming, and I always ended up being the one, okay, you have to do this by that time, like a very short or short-ish time periods where you have to learn a certain number of songs. And I did that kind of stuff for so many years before I wrote my first songs or lyrics for my own bands, because I was too busy playing other people's stuff.
Were you influenced by German 90s industrial music such as Rammstein and KMFDM?
To some extent, but that wasn't really the music that I grew up with. The first music that I really got into was the more or less classical rock, classical hard rock, like everything like the Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Iron Maiden stuff, melodic. I went up to Slayer and Bathory maybe, and all the other things that happened like black metal and death metal, I knew it existed, but I ended up checking it out way later. I first started getting a background in black metal when I was supposed to play it myself. Then I went to friends and asked them, can I borrow your Mayhem and Burzum collection? I have to know what this is about. I'm supposed to play this stuff in a month. Not the songs, but the general sound. And I like the electronic rock, industrial rock stuff, but I discovered it later. I went from listening to like new wave of British heavy metal and everything that came after it, right to Front 242 and Wamsgut and whatnot, when I met a couple of people at my school who were heavily into electronic body music, electronic industrial, and that was the first time for me that I liked music that you could dance to. Before that, it was dancing is for normies, for people who listen to like pop and hip hop music. But the first time they played me stuff like Cobalt 60 and Frontline Assembly, and I listened to that and Nitzer Ebb, and I thought, oh, this is cool dance music. And I discovered KMFDM and that the fusion of electronic beats and electric guitars. I discovered that later. I first discovered pure electronic music coming right from heavy metal, and then later I got into the combinations.
So your latest album under the label Miel Noir, it's an 18-track album released by Caustic Records. This was released in December of 2016.
That's right. That is our third full-length album as a band consisting of two core members plus Gerhard from Allerseelen as our frequent collaborator. And we've
this
got
one is Honeybeat.
This is Honeybeat. And Honeybeat was released by Caustic Records after I got to know, became friends with the owner through our mutual friend who does music under the name Der Blaue Reiter. He's also from, he's got the German name, but he's Spanish, like the label Caustic Records. And we played together at a festival where I was spontaneously asked to perform as a drummer in a five drummer, well, it was more live session than a song performance, but we ended up playing together and became friendly. I didn't even know that he was the owner of the label. I only knew him with his band, Harbelex, and then he told me he was also behind the 90s dark electro project Pale, which I even had in my CD collection on the classic compilation Septic with Wamsgut and all those great 90s and early 2000 dark electronic, and there was this term called Endzeit EBM, the end times electronic body music, and that was one of those acts. And he flat out asked me, I told him I was going to release like a digital EP, why don't you want to do this on my label? And I was like, you've got a label? Which label? And it was one of those things that is just developed. And I'm very happy with the promotion and the quality of Caustic Records, and I think we will continue to work together.
How have the live performances gone for this latest album, Honeybeat?
Since Honeybeat, we only had one live performance, and it was a live performance where the aforementioned owner of the label and this friend of ours from Der Blaue Reiter helped me out as live musicians, because my partner Dimo couldn't make it for that gig. It was a small festival in the Netherlands, and we also had this dear friend of ours. There was I don't know how much you know of the Eastern German classical neo-folk. There are those bands like Forseti and Lega des Heils, and many people are still fans of and listen to Dies Natalis. And one of the original members, who nowadays plays with his band called Stein, S-T-E-I-N, which is the German word for stone, Norbert, he helped us out as a drummer and vocalist, and it was Norbert's birthday, and we had the performance right through his. We got to do the really festival like thing to have the clock strike zero and then go on stage like, we have to sing happy birthday because now it's Norbert's birthday. And we had the whole audience joining in, and it was a performance with all sorts of different changes. We had a grand piano at this place, this old, it wasn't a regular club, it was a former classical theater, and on the ground floor in front of the stage they had an old grand piano, and we did a version of the Miel Noir ballad Anymore, where Sergi of Der Blaue Reiter played the grand piano. We had planned that he should play the keyboards, but when we saw there was a grand piano there, we just had to do it, and it somehow worked. It was magnificent, and there's going to be a studio version with that song, just grand piano and vocals.
And the styles in Honeybeat, they include a wide variety, ranging from dark electro, dark wave, EBM, neoclassical, melodic dark wave, and gothic rock.
It's a little bit of everything, because when we started out with that project, we already had other bands. So that's the one thing that makes Miel Noir somehow work like it does. The two of us had all sorts of different backgrounds. We had like neoclassical stuff. We both had a background in metal, different kinds of metal. We both played folk, and we are both vocalists, multi-instrumentalists, producers. We're both able to do to fill an album. Like, we wouldn't need each other, but we do it because we like it. We like the collaboration, and our approach was we need to somehow incorporate everything that we like. All those different styles, they somehow work together because we make it work. And sometimes we take turns playing different instruments, writing, doing the vocals, but it still sounds somehow like the same band. We managed somehow to give it an overall sound, if that's a thing.
And did you do that intentionally to kind of create a cohesive sound, or do you say it evolved more organically with the various styles?
We hoped it would happen, but we didn't do it intentionally because I didn't really know what I did. I only can listen to it afterwards and I've got the feedback from people who say, oh, they can spot a Miel Noir track, a new one, because of the sound. And it doesn't matter what kind of music style it is, and I believe them, and I think it's a good thing, but I don't know what I did. I don't really plan this, because Miel Noir is one of those projects where everything happens somehow organically, or as you might say, a happy accident.
You also have a dark folk band called Vera. Is this an ongoing project?
Vera was a session in the early 2000s, and then nothing happened. And many years later, I mentioned this on the internet, so it's not a secret. I had some health issues, and there was a time where I was told that it was critical, so there are things that you may end up doing, like even if you're younger, then you write your will, and you get ideas like there's this old hard disk with a session on it, and it's too good not to use it. And it was a time where I was told that I might not see the next year. And then I contacted the German neofolk label Lichterklang and just asked them. There were three songs on different compilations released between, I think, 2005 and 2011 or 12. And I didn't know the owner of the label at that time. I just wrote him an email, would you be interested? This is the material. And he was very interested. And by that time, my motive behind that release was just to have it out there as part of, I don't know, my legacy, I suppose. But I ended up living, which is a good thing, and the CD ended up being rather popular, so that it was the first CD on that label to receive a second pressing with bonus tracks and a bit of a graphic overhaul. And so Vera is a project that was revived by popular demand, because the label was bombarded with questions, is more coming, is what's with that project? And it was just two people playing. I didn't even have a studio back then. It was just in a room in the basement. But yeah, there is a new album, brand new actually, called Vent au Vent, which is French for Winds Blow. In German, it's also an alliteration. It's Winde Wehen, two W's. In French, it's two V's. And we wrote and recorded an entire album because people were badgering us, including the label. But we really got into it and even recruited a third member, an accordion player, who also ended up singing a bit. And we're really happy with it. We expanded the sound in Vera, added a couple more instruments. It's still classical neo-folk, I suppose, but I added the cello, and we have one song with electric guitars and different vocal styles. We take turns doing the vocals, and people seem to like it. There's still a market, if you want, for that kind of music. People have been claiming that sound was dead for years, or that scene was stagnant or whatever. I always say that as long as you have good songs, it doesn't matter if this... Vera is not groundbreaking. There's not much innovation with regards to style. It's just good folk music, and some people like it.
Can you talk about the vocals for the album Honeybeat?
The vocals are always made to fit the style. I like doing the melodic vocals, but I also enjoy the harsh industrial styles and the distortion. But the thing that I have been doing with Miel Noir is this is the first time where I ended up being the main songwriter and producer for an entire album. And I always liked female vocals, both as backing vocals and as lead vocals. And there are four different female vocalists in Miel Noir, and depending on the song, they come in with their unique styles. One of those is a friend of ours, Faye from Algeria, and she's not just from there, but she's in that country and recorded her vocals there. So we've never met in person. She's a collaborator through the internet, and she's got a style like I always tell people, try to remember the new version that the Sisters of Mercy did of the old song Temple of Love with that female singer Ofra Haza. That typical, I think it always sounds a bit Middle Eastern to me, those vocals. You can also find them in projects like Dead Can Dance, and I always wanted to incorporate that style in some song. And I'm really happy that I found that singer, and the other three singers are all friends of mine. One of them also is a graphic artist who did all the illustrations for the first Miel Noir full-length album, Honey and Ash. And the fourth singer, after recording the songs for the previous Miel Noir album, ended up being my girlfriend. So she's staying. We only ever expanded our collaborators. We never really changed them.
Is there an overall theme with the lyrics?
There's one thing that always comes up, is that general topic of honey and bees, and there's a lot of stuff that you can find there if you just do a bit of research. There's a hymn to the goddess Demeter of ancient Greece, who has honey as one of her primary sacrifices. And the song is called Honey Offering, and the subtitle is Demeter's March, and it's basically a modern English language prayer. And on the very same album, we've got the Christian legend of the Christian saint, Saint Ambrose. There's the legend that his extreme power of persuasion, he was this great and renowned orator. It was told by Saint Ambrose's father that as a child, baby Saint Ambrose was laying there, and a swarm of bees landed on the child's head, but none of the bees heard the style. He wasn't stung. And when the bees left, they left one drop of honey on the tip of the tongue of the child Saint Ambrose, and that's supposed to have given him his great order abilities, his power of persuasion and speaking. And this is one of the many legends that's in the Christian lore about bees and honey. Saint Ambrose is also the patron saint of beekeepers.
Can you talk about the process for designing the albums? Obviously, the big theme of the albums is bees.
We've got, as I said before, we rarely change our people with whom we collaborate. We only expand that circle, and our graphic designer has been with us from the start. He created the Miel Noir logo, and his voice can be heard on the album From the Ashes. He is featured on two of the songs, and we more or less gave him the material and told him, do your thing, you're good with this. You know what we like, you know how it's supposed to somehow convey the mood of the album, because the album before that one was much darker, and it's got the artwork is comparable, but if you hold the two albums next to each other, you see like this one is dark and moody, and the other one is more upbeat, and we're really happy with what he's done.
What type of visual imagery appeals to you, and how does the aesthetics of the album covers relate to your music?
I think the imagery of the bee, this is the album is more alive than the one before. So the one before has the cover with those really dark and seemingly dead honeycombs. And as a contrast, the new one has the bee filling the comb, like coming from the side into the picture, and the colors are really bright and vibrant and golden. So the whole thing somehow conveys activity and life, whereas the one before was a bit more like the honey end times. And what I'm really happy with is the color scheme, because it's the whole thing may be gothic, dark wave, industrial, take your pick, but there's almost no black in it.
That's really fascinating. But with darker, would you say darker colors, but no black? Or even with lighter colors, you can capture that?
I think this album is a direct follow-up and an opposite to the predecessor. And you can really see that there was two sides of the same coin, and the thing that really made the difference was I survived really painful and dangerous throat surgeries, and there is a song on that new album called End of the Line, which is autobiographical. I wrote that in a hospital, and I wrote the song after I signed the, what would that be in English, like a do not resuscitate note. So like if my brain were to be without oxygen for that much time, so that would result in, like, you could be more or less sure that I would be brain damaged. I gave them the note, then please do not resuscitate me. And that's what the song is about. But I'm still here, so everything worked out. But that's the thing that may end up changing you. If you had, like, I think there are people who say after a certain accident or whatever may have happened to them, that they now celebrate like two birthdays. This is a place and a time where my life might have ended and it didn't. So it was some sort of a transformative event, if you want. And it was a bit of a reset. And the whole thing with the color scheme and with some of the lyrics on that album, you can, if you listen to both albums back to back, you hear the difference.
So you're saying that the recent album is after your surgery and the previous one was before the surgery, so depending on how your emotional state has a very strong impact on the types of music and songs you put out.
That's true, and some of the material has accumulated over time, and it was a total of five of those surgeries. They didn't get it right the first couple of times, or didn't do enough, so to speak. So it was in between those, some of those songs that are more personal are snapshots of moments where I wrote something down. And this time, this album, it includes like actual love inspired songs like Duldungsstarre or What I Want, or most importantly, the song What Once Was Lost, which explicitly deals with that by that time relatively new relationship of mine. There are still other songs like Die Lehre and the aforementioned Anymore, which deal with, well, Love's Lost is one of those topics that everybody has his or her own approach and experiences. But this is love, either having it or not having it, is really universal. So I have no idea what percentage of modern music deals with the topic of love. I think it's a lot. There's still something more to say about that topic every day, because it's just so all-encompassing, and it's something that everybody can interface with. Everybody has something that he or she can interpret into it. So the song on the new album that has gotten, I think, the most feedback is the ballad Anymore, for some reason. And that was also my... That was the one thing that led me to entering that song into a song contest in Germany, where it's getting some attention from people from other scenes, because that song contest is open to all kinds of styles, even like German Schlager pop and techno music and rap and hip hop.
And is this song contest still ongoing?
That's still ongoing. I put the link on the Facebook page of Miel Noir and on my personal account, and that page of that song contest can be switched to English by clicking on a flag icon. So I would ask all of your listeners to check out that song and give me one of those like clicks on that song contest page. Just follow the link on the Facebook page, and I'm trying to, because since it's more or less a ballad, I think this could be one of those songs that may transcend the it's filed under Gothic at that contest page. But you can listen to that as a, let's say, pop music or rock music listener. It's approachable dark wave-ish music. I've heard good things about it from people who have no idea what the other sounds that Miel Noir incorporate, what they're even called. Like, just... I think I like the word normies, because this the German term that I grew up with, normalos, it sounds too German, it sounds too harsh. Normies with the E sound at the end, it sounds cute. Yeah. I think normies, you can draw it out a bit. Oh, he's a normie. This I think that word is better. I think I already used it in German conversations, calling people a normie, instead of, if you end on that O sound, if you call someone normalo, it's not, it doesn't have that edge. You can, with normie, you can give that sound an edge. Oh, he's a normie. And I like that.
And that term, it kind of originated from internet subculture, but it seems to be really spreading.
I think a lot of that internet subculture slang has penetrated the mainstream, and one of those words that has been thrown around in the internet subculture, the trigger warning, ended up inspiring me to write the song of that same title. And that's been getting some radio airplay recently. I think this song is a bit older even than the album release from 2016, December 2016. But I think I wrote an anti-social justice warrior song before I knew what that word meant.
Is there an equivalent of the social justice warrior scene in Germany? I mean, I'm sure there is, but it's probably called something else.
Yeah, Germans have started to use that word, especially because it's become a word of its own. They just use the abbreviation SJW in German texts. And the thing that we had way before as an organized, also violent group and as a name, is the thing that's been sweeping the Anglosphere recently. And I'm not sure who's pronouncing it right. People say Antifa or Antifa. Where do you put that accent? Where is it? Is it Antifa with the E sound, or is it Antifa?
I've actually heard Americans pronounce it both ways.
I think I already knew about that word and about that group. Like in elementary school, I even heard that word. So we've had that for a long time. That was a driving force behind cancellations of neo-folk projects performing here in Germany. Like people like Death in June had problems with Antifa 20 years ago or so. So it's in Germany and in other European countries, that's an old phenomenon. And it's kind of cute this time it's the other way around. Usually we ended up getting stuff, cultural influences from the United States years after certain waves and trends had already passed. And this time you got our thing.
Oh, yeah.
Years later.
For sure.
Yeah, and this is one thing that I really, as a musician and as a listener, as a fan, that I really dislike, is people trying to ban other people's work, events, performances, CD releases, whatever. If you want to counter something you don't like, then do your own thing and don't interfere with a concert, with someone's CD contract or TV show or whatever. I really dislike the idea of what's called the heckler's veto, that you just show up to an event you don't like and you try to stop it.
Yeah, that's happened a lot with speakers at college campuses, but people usually think about that happening with political figures, but it's not just politics, it's even with musicians and artists as well.
The first time my partner in Miel Noir, Demo, and I met face to face was at a concert by the band where at that time I was already a live musician, Alla Seelen, performed in Bavaria. And Dimo ended up lending us some equipment. And that concert, that was over, I think it was 10 years ago or so, we had to have police protection, basically, because the Antifa group, the local group, somehow had decided that Alla Seelen was a right-wing political project, and it was worse. They wrote to the police and tried to get the concert banned. And I still have that email exchange back and forth. And Gerhard was approached by the local police asking about what the concert was going to be like, and he flat out sent them his entire lyric stash and told the officer that, I don't know what he was, some kind of detective, sergeant, whatever, and he told him, "Sir, this is all my stuff. Please tell me where I am a right-wing propagandist." And this very nice and diligent officer read all the lyrics and wrote back, "Well, I don't see anything right-wing or even political in here. So please do come have your concert." And he made the mistake to write back to the Antifa activists, "We checked out all the material by that band. Are you sure you're protesting the right people?" And those guys went ballistic. They created their own website and accused the police of working hand in hand with fascists, and they were going to have their march and protest the gig. And the police said, "Well, if you want to, you can do that, but then we have to come and like be there for an orderly event to take place, because we're going to let these people have their concert. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't even do anything political. So we had armed police basically as security for our sold out concert." And then it took a bit longer because they checked everybody for weapons at the entrance, and there was nothing even remotely political to the material. They just didn't like some of the symbolism and the paganism, and Friedrich Nietzsche is like one of those no-go writers for these people.
What is the specific reference to Friedrich Nietzsche? I think it's one of your album covers.
And that was Alla Seelen, and the poem about the flame. I think there is a more or less official English translation of the one that goes, I am the flame that's been set to music by Alla Seelen, I think 4 times over the course of the album history. And there's one of those albums by Alla Seelen is even called Flamme, and it's got the English translation of the Nietzsche poem. It's a prose poem, and other stuff like you can't have pre-Christian European pagan imagery anywhere. It doesn't even have to be runes, can be any other sort of pagan imagery. If you're somehow concerned or interested in European roots, I suppose. The thing that America goes through these days, where everything that's not left-wing enough is considered right-wing, we've had that for decades. So this is, you really started our, this is our thing. Well, not our thing, but there are many people over here who are totally set in their ways, and it's getting worse with them. So you can't even use certain people's poetry, even if the poetry is about nature or whatever, if there's something in their history where they might not have been against the Third Reich enough, or something even before, during, if they were on the wrong side during the First World War, or if they were too much in favor of their own country, people, heritage, what have you. So you have to have a certain amount of leftism in everything, otherwise you could be attacked for being right-wing, even though there's not really that much political content in there.
What is your current project that you're working on? You mentioned that you're working on a CD label that's a compilation of tracks.
Yeah, it's not just a compilation of tracks, but it's an entire compilation of collaboration tracks. And it's going to be, the CD is going to be called Dark Europa, and it's going to be released on the label Panic Machine. And there are some interesting and well-known names on it, and the other new or newer projects on there also come highly recommended. I've got the list here. It's got a total of 7 collaboration tracks with Miel Noir in them, so it's a lot of new Miel Noir material. We've got a side project of the really well-known gothic band Two Witches on there. The project is called Chaos Research, and there's one of those tracks is a collaboration track with Miel Noir. We've got the new project, which is also on the last album, Honeybeat, as a remix project. It's called Winterheart, and it's the same people who were already famous in the late 80s as Dance or Die, the electronic body music band that has been relaunched. The same abbreviation, but now it's not Dance or Die anymore. It's called Darkness on Demand. And both of those projects, highly recommended. Really good friends of ours from Berlin. And we've got the former guitar player of Alien Sex Fiend with her new project. We've got a friend of ours from a London-based concert organizer, and she released a great CD compilation with Miel Noir and people like Wumpscut and Parade Ground on it. Goes by Snow White with a total of 4 W's. She's also behind the electronic industrial project Standgericht. We've got a side project of the German electro band Insect Plasma called Phobos Reactor on it. We've got people from all, the whole concept is people from all over Europe, different dark sounds collaborating with each other on an exclusive track. And it's going to be a total of, I think it's 76 minutes and 19 tracks on it, and a lot of good stuff. Folk with an original Finnish kantele up to electronic, industrial. It's got a bit of metal on it. It's got all sorts of, club-oriented electronic music, electronic rock, and it's all of those songs create something new just by being collaborations. Even if you're a fan, or even if you're used to the sound of one or the other projects, it's the whole thing was modeled after a collaboration compilation series from the 90s called the Remix Wars, where the point was the projects working together were also in the title were set against each other to compete who remixes the other one into the ground. And we flipped that on its head and said, this is all about collaborating. We're making the songs, the song ideas, better by working together, and this is going to be good. I've heard, I think, 2/3 of the material thus far, and I'm very happy with it. I'm looking forward to having that thing out there, and it's going to be soon. I don't know when, but like, let's say next month. We'll keep you posted on that.
Excellent. Yeah, I definitely look forward to that coming out. And Marcel P., thank you so much for being on. Big fan of your work, and check out his latest album, Honeybeat.
Thank you so much for having me.